D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 376, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Max Monty from MaxMTechnology.com. Hey, welcome to the show, Max.
Hey, glad to be here. It's been a while since I've been on, and I know we've been emailing back and forth, and finally we're able to catch up with each other, and most of it was on my side, so no one think Jeff doesn't know what he's doing. It was on my side, so.
Hey, I appreciate you coming out and sharing with us and taking some time. I know schedules and family and stuff like that can get quite hectic during certain times of the year, so I understand. Yes. That just a real quick reference, I know you've been on the show before, but why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got started in computer repair, just for anybody who doesn't remember.
I really kind of got into computers whenever I was in the military. And then most of it was for gaming purposes. Whenever we were on deployment, I kind of took that on as either, you go out and get drunk about the towns whenever we were on deployments, depending on where we were, of course, or stay on base and get drunk, save your money, and play video games. And at the time, it was Rogue Spear. So I ended up, networking several computers together. And, that was really kind of my big start. I tinkered a little bit when I was younger. I think I had an old, can't remember exactly. It was a Commodore, had the, cassette deck that you could record your programs to. But it wasn't until after I got out of the service, whenever I was trying to figure out what I was going to do, that I really got into it, started doing some schooling on it. And then once we moved away from the big city and we got back out to smaller town like we were used to, come to find out the town I was living in had two computer people. One focused mainly on businesses and charged an outlandish amount, regardless if he was business or residential. And the other one was here about a month, and then he moved out. So word got around that that's kind of what I did, and finally I said, I'm going to stop being the nice guy next door, and we're going to pay some money up. And that's kind of really how I got started with my business. And it was, side job, part time. Started out really good. I've been doing it actually, this July will be 5 years. And, off and on, like, most of us, we think, do we go full time doing this? But I just hadn't really wanted to do that. Most of it was on the insurance side, just because of I got such a large family, that was kind of where I've been. Picked up a couple of different other specialties along the way, mainly iPhone repair, and I got a sheet stuck over here in my pending folder of all kinds of projects that I have either on the table or that I want to put on the table or that I just want to take everything off the table. I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at right now. It's like, do I still want to do it or not? And we'll get into that later on.
Gotcha. So, okay.
I'll cut up.
Going to say, I think that's where a lot of technicians are at. Everybody gets to that point. So now let me get this straight. So you still work a full-time job plus do this on the side?
Correct.
Okay. And I was looking at your website, and I see the iPhone repair and the prices you charge and stuff. And it's your website looks beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, real easy to read, real easy to contact information, all that kind of stuff. A good technology computer repair website, I think. And I also I see recycle program too. That's kind of unique.
Still working it.
Okay.
I'm missing a lot of things on it, but that was enough for me to get it up there, what I needed up there. Time, family.
Exactly. No, I definitely understand. So no, your website looks great. I really, I like it. All right. So What types of things have you been working on lately? What's been your big hitters in the shop there?
I guess I'm not gonna say odd as it is. I mean, it's still just the same occasional, I've got a rogue virus, or, you know, the FBI is watching me. What, you know, I just paid them, you know, $50 and it's still on here, you know, that kind of stuff. I've got a lot of business clients that, are just kind of at that point to where they need to get new systems. So, a lot of new system, setups and guidance on that. And, really, I mean, that's kind of it. Mainly, I've been really trying to focus on iPhone repair just because it's easier and less, you know, easier. I make more off of it, and it's not very long. I mean, 30 minutes a job. So
that's great to know, because I've dabbled in trying to fix an iPod Touch one time, and after dabbling in it, I said never again.
Yeah, well, don't let the iPod Touch be your kill all, because that one is a little obnoxious beast.
I think I broke pretty much everything on there that I could possibly break, and I take laptops apart all the time, and I'm really good at it. And I was like, this is just too small. It's too delicate. Yeah. It's just too, yeah. It was not for me, that's for sure. So in the iPhone repairs, mostly obviously screens, cracked screens is what you're replacing.
Yeah, that's the majority, but I mean, you know, anything from a charging dock to a microphone not working to, you know, my camera is weird. Come to find out they've got, you know, a pocket full of lint inside their phone, however they managed to do that. You know, you see crazy stuff. You know, I'm sure any other techs out there that, you know, same as with computers, you know, coming in with roaches and, you know,
right.
Looks like dead cats in there from all the lint buildup from sitting under the desk. You know, iPhones, you know, they get that kind of abuse and that kind of odd things inside of it. One time I opened one up and it was full of sand. I was like, what is this? And they're like, well, they brought it in because the back was broke. And it was just enough for it. It was up around the camera, and so they ended up peeling it off. And they go to we got a river out here that everyone goes to, and it's got a big sandy area to it. So it, yeah. Anyway, it was full of sand.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I would have thought mostly screens and stuff like that. But if you're doing the charging ports and microphones and cameras and all those little tiny things. So, but if you found a way to do it and make your most money, that's awesome. Cause that really, I think that's what it gets. We all get to a point where when we start a computer repair business, we really like computer repair and we really want to help people. But I think everyone gets to a point in their business where they go, you know what? I like helping people, but I also like being paid well for my time and the expertise that, you know, the things that I've learned that other people are not willing to learn. So, they're not willing to learn it. They're going to have to pay for that type of service. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. And so hopefully, as people are growing their businesses, they get to a point where they realize that and go, you know what, I'm going to charge a fair price, but it's going to be a price that's beneficial to both parties. The customer is going to get the, you know, excellent service from a good technician, and the technician is going to be well paid for their time, you know, so.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I mean, even to this date, you know, that's why I finally on my website. Well, I mean, I had the old, the older website package that Steve originally started, and I had my prices and stuff on that. But God, you know, it's like you say, it's hard to feel like to stick to your guns and, you know, get what you deserve, you know,
right.
Like you say, you know, you've got a skill, you know, and, if you call your, you know, guy to come out to fix your, you know, air conditioning system, he's got a price that he's going to, you know,
exactly.
So just, you know, that a lot, I don't know. It seems like whenever I talk to other guys, you know, they kind of have the same problem. So just, you know, make it worth your time. Cause you know, eventually, you know, it'll start eating at you to where you're just kind of not feeling like you're worth it. You know what I'm saying? Right. I mean, as far as the amount of time you put in and the money, anytime you come back to, you know, balance your books at the end of the month, you know, people are going to take it someplace else, to get it fixed. So, you know, you might as well, you know, do it, stick to your guns, charge your prices. And, I base my prices, for my iPhone repair, I kind of do, a surrounding, area to see what everyone else is charging. I mean, I'm small town, so you know, my closest biggest city that does it is 2 hours away. So I kind of base my rates off of there and then raise it a little bit because nobody wants to drive, you know, that far to go get their phone fixed.
Right.
Whenever they can do it locally here and have it done in an hour. So, you know, I just because of my locality, I raise it just a little bit, but I still think it's pretty fair. Everyone else thinks it's fair. The only thing you kind of watch is like when you do the iPhone 4s, you know, most contracts now, you know, you get them for free. So I kind of lower those about as low as I can really go. I set my price to where I feel like $75 an hour is my price, regardless of what I should do, unless I do something on site and it's $85. You know, for an iPhone repair, you know, $65 is what I'm going to charge regardless.
Okay.
Then I add the parts to it, and parts for the phones are for that, especially for the iPhone 4, 4S is are really cheap now. So, you know, $85 still really fair. Nobody's complaining. I had a couple of people complain. I was like, well, you know, go buy you a new phone.
Right.
Transfer your data, you know, update it. You know, get all your apps, you know, resync everything. Oh, you haven't resync your phone lately? You've never plugged it into your iTunes? Really? Oh, so you're backing up to the you're not backing up to the iCloud? Wow.
Yeah, you're about to lose everything.
Yeah, so you know, that's you know, that kind of leads us off to another one, but we're talking prices. You know, make it fair to yourself, make it fair to your family, make it fair to your own time.
Yeah,
you
know, absolutely.
You spend a lot of time, you spend money, hardware, doing stuff. So,
you know, I'm going to tell everybody out there too, the next time you're out in a, out getting your car fixed at a repair shop, go and look at the prices on the wall for what these mechanics are getting, or what they're charging for the mechanics. The mechanics aren't making the whole amount. But the last time I looked, it was well over $100. And I want to say it was around $125 an hour for any type of, you know, repair on a vehicle. And you have to take that kind of worth. I know things are a lot cheaper with electronics, but the bottom line is if people want them fixed, they got to be willing to pay, a decent price for that. So, yeah, I'm looking on your website. So you in shop, it looks like you charge $75 an hour. And repairs done on site, $85 an hour. So you've gone away from now. Did you do a flat rate before, or have you always been hourly?
No, I've always been hourly, but I mean, really, it kind of works out to a flat rate because most jobs that I ever do, I won't really go over 2 hours. You know,
okay,
unless it's something specialized, I don't know, a network setup for a business or something like that. If someone brings me their laptop, desktop, says, I've got a virus, you know, pretty much I know how long it's going to take me to fix it. So it's almost really a flat rate, but I always, you know, give a range. Always give myself the safety of, say, an hour and a half at the most, you know, because, you know, as we all know, we don't physically spend an hour and a half hands-on. You know, the device, you know, you could spend 30 minutes, you could spend 3 hours total, you know, working on it, but you're not going to have 3 hours total hands-on on it, you know, while you're waiting for scans and updates and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of, you know, and then, you know, I take the hardware itself into consideration. You know, if it's an old laptop, you know, running a Pentium 3 or, you know,
I hadn't
had one of those in a while, but you know, a Pentium 4 or a Celeron or a Centrino, you know, or old AMD, you know, some old, you know, if you can get a laptop for, you know, under $500, $400 bucks most of the time. So, you know, I always take that in consideration for the clients. as well, you know, because if they're going to spend two, you might as well get you a new system, especially if it's XP. You know, that's been my biggest thing lately is,
okay,
is steering people away from XP, because it's, you know, it's only going to get worse. You know, Internet Explorer, you know, as we all know, a couple of weeks ago was just annihilated again, right, as usual. You know, XP is just going to get worse.
Yeah. Well, if it was already, as far as viruses and stuff, if it wasn't already worse, because I think pretty much every XP machine that came in the shop over the last few years was definitely infected. And, mm-hmm, you know, even with old infections that you hadn't seen in years, you were like, wow, where did that come from? But, you know, so that was a very, you know, as far as viruses and stuff, for what people do on the internet, I think that was a very open system for the most part. I never had personally had a problem with XP and had only gotten infected one time, I think about 10 mm-hmm. years ago. And after that, I learned my lesson and I don't click on anything. So
exactly. Yeah. And again, it's all, you know, user knowledge and user safety.
Right.
And, you know, I've had some people, it's just like, you know, you don't need a computer.
Right.
You shouldn't use a computer. Just here's your some pen and paper and use that. And here's a phone book.
You know, that's funny because I had the same conversation with my dad. And I don't think he's ever going to listen to the show. But he said he was getting frustrated and just complaining about his computer. And I just said, Dad, I said, shut the computer off. Go get you a pad of paper and a pen. And then don't worry about it no more. All right. And he was like, after that, he was kind of like, all right, I get your point. Thank you. Let's move on. So with a lot of the jobs you're doing, like, you know, going back to the iPhone, you're able to turn those over in an hour. And I'm sorry, I'm jumping around here, but I just found that fascinating that you're able to turn these over in an hour. So you must stock a lot of parts there with you so that you're able to do those turnovers. You know, how do you do that?
I've usually got, you know, five of each model. You know, of course, when you're into the iPhone 4s, then you got the GSM version, which is AT&T, and then you got the CDMA Verizon model. And that's really all I have. You know, I've done a couple of T-Mobile phones, but where I'm at, everything is AT&T or Verizon, which is irrelevant because it's the GSM or CDA is the factor. And then, you know, because the screens are different for the GSMs and for the CDMAs just because of the setup on the inside, based on how Apple developed those.
Okay.
And then when it went 4S, then it didn't really matter. And then when you get into the 5 and the 5S, you know, those screens are different. The 5 and the 5S have different ribbons, shapes. So you got to have a variety of those. And then you got to have the black and white. And then I have a few custom screens that I keep on hand of common colors, you know, pink and blues and you know, yellows, custom colors like that, gold. I try to keep those parts on hand and then various little internal parts, anywhere from extra batteries to charging docks to power buttons to cameras. So I've got not a huge stock of iPhone parts, but I keep them just on hand. It just makes it easier for me and for the customers, to be able to do it right then. So
That's good. Yeah, that's it. Now, do you use one? Do you order these parts off of eBay, or you just kind of from the same vendor, or you just kind of find the deals that you need and buy a little bit in bulk here and there?
Yeah, I've worked with a couple of manufacturers based in China, you know, that actually make them, and I've gotten several price quotes and I've almost executed on a few of them, but I just haven't bought a huge amount because I usually only buy about five because the prices on them change really fast.
Okay.
And especially like when the 5 came out, the prices on them was like crazy. You know, they were like $200. And then, you know, 3 months later, they were less. And then 6 months later, they were way less. So, you know, had I bought a whole lot right off the bat, one, you're not going to have that many coming in. And then two, you don't want to be stuck with, you know, that big of a margin loss for right. a part that, you know, because I usually get mine, depending on, you know, which eBay, you know, you ask that. So, yeah, eBay is where I get most of mine. Okay. I usually stick to, you know, two or three vendors. I try to stick to the ones that are local. When I say local, I mean in Texas, because, you know, shipping on it is usually a day, the next day sometimes, or, you know, within 2 days. But, I mean, I even have a couple of from California that I ordered from that's been really great. I mean, I'll click the, you know, payment now button and, you know, 5 minutes later, you know, they acknowledge it. And, you know, 30 minutes later, you know, I get an email saying it's been shipped.
Right.
So, you know, you just kind of got to go through the vendors, find out which one of the good vendors. I've been stuck a couple of times with some just really low grade screens. That the frames were mounted to the glass backward, or, you know, upside down. What was supposed to be the top was mounted to the bottom. When you try to mount it through the phone, you're like, yeah, that's not going to work.
Oh no.
You know, I've had a couple of bad screens, but I got a test ribbon that, whenever I get them in, I just test on my screens right when I get them in. So,
how do you do that? How do you test the screens?
They you can get a little ribbon, and it's male, female on both ends. And, it's just, you just, you know, I got a couple of, older phones, of each model that I use, that I keep on here in the shop, just for mainly testing my screens whenever I get them, or testing, you know, a new charging board when I get it in or something like that.
Oh, that's great.
And so I just, you know, hook up the ribbon on one end, so that way you're not having to try to pull it off the motherboard every time and test each one. It's really all it is about it's about a 4-inch extension of the ribbon that allows you to connect the screen to the motherboard without trying to do it in such a small confined area.
Okay.
And so those okay. those have been really, really handy for those testing that. And then, you know, again, you know, just find you a vendor. I've had a couple of good vendors, and then I try to go to find them, and they're not there no more. So, you know,
I think a lot of times there's such a small margin in these parts that it's really hard unless you get, unless you get some constant business going. And I know I keep finding a couple good vendors for laptop parts on eBay, and it's amazing the amount of stuff they have. And, you know, my one hope is, when I need these one-off parts, is that they're still around so that I can order parts from them. And I do the same thing. I don't know that there's any vendors in Michigan per se, but I usually order from either New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Kentucky, kind of down in that area where I can get the stuff in 1 or 2 days very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
You know, as long as they ship it out quick, even through the you know, postal service, it's fairly quick. So
it is, yeah. Yeah, you know, a lot of times I've had you know, people, you know, that's the thing around here is, you know, here in Texas, everyone just kind of laid back. You know, up here in the countryside, I guess everyone just kind of laid back. They got a screen, and, you know, I don't have the part. And they're like, well, all right, well, yeah. Of course, some of the spares that I do have, I have on a, you know, occasion just lent it to people that needed one. You know, I didn't mess with uploading their sync or anything like that, you know, just throw in their SIM card, especially if it was AT&T and you know, right. Let them go with it. So, you know, but that, you know, that worked until, you know, for 2 or 3 days until they got their other phone in. If it was just one that was just annihilated, which several have been like that. And, you know, It's you know, and the thing is what I like about the iPhone repair is I mean, if it's not the motherboard, then you can pretty much do a complete rebuild on the entire phone. I've done that, you know, anywhere from the frame itself, you know, all the way, you know, from the screen all the way down to the frame to the internal ribbons and stuff for the power button and the volume buttons and stuff like that. So, you know, and I've tried working on other devices, other droids and stuff like that, and it's just, you know, anyone else that's tried it, if you're continually doing it, then, you know, good for you. But I just found that they had too many little parts on them most of the time. There were just so much ribbons that were stuck down that you had to keep pulling ribbons off of here and off of there. Little bitty wires that were, you know, soldered here and soldered there. And there's just too many little parts for the, you know, two or three that I tried. Plus, I don't use those devices. And I don't want to have to try to stock inventory for the numerous, you know, droid based phones that are out there. So,
well, you're probably in a good niche because I, you know, there's probably more, I would still say, I know Android is very popular and stuff, but there's probably a lot of, you know, Apple phones out there.
Yeah.
And that's probably a good market to be in because, you know, you look around and you see a lot of the iPhones here and there. So, yeah, I can see that because a lot of these other vendors, you do have to stock. Yeah, you would have to stock a lot of parts because there's so many different manufacturers and so many different styles even inside those manufacturers.
Right, so, right. Yep. Yeah, and the same, you know, all this, you know, saying on the iPhone, it all really applies as well to the iPad. I mean, the iPads are really easy to fix. And you know, we were initially when we got started, we were talking about the iPods.
Right.
The iPods are, you know, if you get familiar with them, they are kind of obnoxious, but you know, they are fixable. And you know, I do those occasionally. I've recommended to some people that brought in a the 8 gig iPods that, you know, you'd be better off just go buy a new one.
Right.
You know, they were a way older model. And one problem that I've talked to a couple other techs about that they have also is the iPod screens. They don't have any type of lips or any type of notches to secure it back to the frame. It's just a straight stick on.
Right.
Repair. So if you've got, you know, some bad real 3M tape that comes with it, you know, if it's not got a high tackiness to it, then the phone, you know, that the screen's not going to stick. So I've had some that come in like that. Not, you know, anytime before I do one, I always tell them as well that you know, there's a high chance that the screen won't stay down. Or if it gets heated, you know, if you leave it in your car or, you know, have it in your out in the sun or something like that, that, you know, it could lose its tackiness. And to me, iPods really, because they're so thin, I hate trying to handle them. They need to be in just, you know, just a bumper case at the minimum.
Yeah, so I've heard other techs actually, that's what they were doing. Well, I've heard a couple different stories. I've heard people using super glue, which
yeah,
pretty much seals it. And then I've heard other people just, once they get the screen down, putting some sort of case on it, and that helps to hold the screen in so that they it'll work.
Yeah,
the problem I had with the one that I did was that I took it all apart. I ripped the volume lever or the volume rocker cable off.
Right.
I destroyed the cables on the camera. And so I replaced everything. I resoldered the rocker cable back on. I, you know, replaced the camera. Everything was cheap until the area where you put the power switch on. And there's a piece of cast aluminum. Why in the world they make it cast aluminum? I have no idea. That is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. But anyways, cast aluminum, because where this girl had dropped it, it cracked in half.
Oh, gosh.
So there's nothing to push against. And I couldn't find that replacement part. So I finally just, I was just doing it as a test for a friend. I finally said, you know what? Tell her I destroyed it and it's gone. I just threw it in the garbage.
Oh, no.
I'm like, you know what? Go buy her another one. I'm done. I said, this is just not worth it, you know? So, and now you're telling me, okay, so let's go back to the iPad because I'm curious about that. I've heard, and I don't know, but I've heard through different texts that basically some of the iPads are easier than others. As the generation kept coming, as the newer generations kept coming out, those were actually harder to work on. Is that true?
I've never had to do an iPod or iPod, iPad one.
Okay.
I've got someone telling me that they have one, and I'm just kind of trying to shun them because they have clips that hold the screens in.
Right.
And I haven't done it. From what I've read, it's kind of a pain in the butt to try to put those clips back in. So I'm trying to shun him away and just tell him to buy a new one. I've done the every other generation I've done. The iPad Air, from what I've read on iFixit, is pretty hard to repair.
Okay.
I haven't looked back to it, but I mean, anything else in between is really pretty simple. You just got to make sure that you know which generation you got, so that way you get the right screen. Because again, between the generations, they changed the touchscreen ribbon to where they're in totally different places.
Okay.
And outside that, most of the time, whether it's Gen 3, Gen 4, 2, whatever you want to go with, they're heat up the glass and carefully lift the glass off and fold it over and pop a couple of screws and it's about the same across the board after that. It's just really? Making sure you got the right hardware. Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. Wouldn't believe how many calls I get for iPads all the time. And I'm like, nah, I don't fix those.
Right.
Yeah. And that's probably my own fault.
Yeah. And the hardest thing about the iPads is if they don't have it in the case, they're going to drop it and it's always going to be dropped. And it's always going to land on the top, and it's always going to land on one of the corners.
Right.
And then when you try to go back to repair the screen, your glass isn't going to fit because that corner is going to be bent. So you got to reshape it. So that is probably really the most difficult part is trying to get that frame reshaped so it can accept glass. And
you can do that, right? Or you figured out a way to do that? So how do you go through that process?
I just break out my Dremel and break out my dental tools and a little rubber mallet and just slowly, hopefully each one of them just kind of a hope and a prayer. You can look at it and tell how bad it is.
Okay.
If you think it's going to be fixable or not. And then, just slowly pound it out, pound it back as much as you think you can without breaking it. And then, slowly shape it back into place and grind here and grind there with the Dremel.
Okay.
And, one good thing is I've had a couple that were pretty bad, but there's a plastic frame that goes between the glass and the aluminum frame itself. There's a little plastic frame that sits on there. So that kind of helps protect a little bit on the glass. But I've had one that I couldn't do it. Every time I put two screens in it, and no matter how I tried to shape it, it always ended up cracking. I just told them that the frame is too bad. We can order a new frame if you want. It's going to be a pain in the butt to repair. And I haven't checked lately, but the frames used to be pretty expensive. And this was, I don't know, maybe about a year ago or so on this particular iPad. So they just kind of had to go with it wasn't a big crack. It was just a small crack in the upper left corner behind the power button. And I said, put it in a frame or in a case. And again, iPads need to be in a case, regardless, if it's a big monster case or just a little rubber type of case. But, that will keep the corners from getting jacked up.
Right. It is amazing that somebody's going to spend, $500 on a device and then not spend $20 to protect the thing.
Right. And a lot of times people will ask me when they get a new device, especially out here, cause we got a lot of, ranchers, cowboys, and mainly oil filled, they'll always come in and ask me, should I put it in an OtterBox? Should I put it in a LifeProof case? Should I put it in, some of these other varieties out there? And, I guess I'll just leave it kind of up to them. How rough environment are you in? you know, where's your phone going to be? But for the average user, I've always referred them just to, you know, to use just some of the, you know, $20 or, you know, $15 type of cases. You know, at the minimum, just use some of the rubber, the rubber bumper cases. That's all I've ever used on mine. I mean, originally I started off with, you know, an OtterBox. I was like, you know, I'm going to keep it pristine and prime and, you know, I don't want it to get scratched. And then come to find out that the OtterBox, you know, caused just as much as abuse because, you know, it'll still get grit and grime down behind it. And then, you know, most of those type of cases will still allow even a little bit of moisture to get in behind the plastic between the glass. And, you know, that'll leave little, you know, water marks or, you know, just even scratch marks in there. And so I just stopped doing it because, you know, a little bit of the bulk, but I can fix my own phone. That was really my thing. I was like, who cares if I break it? I
can fix it. Right. Exactly. That's good. Yeah. I always put I've got an Android phone and I always put some sort of case on it where, at least it has a lip on the screen. And then when it has a lip on the screen, it can basically, if it falls on the ground, it'll fall and not hit anything. So, all right, Max. So, what other types of stuff have you been working on lately?
All righty. As a tech, we always kind of, or at least we should, have other ideas going on in our heads. The tech business, the computer business is always changing. And then, you know, with Windows 8, I'm sure that not many users know that you can, use the, what is the feature where you basically refresh it over?
I know what you're talking about.
I can't think of it. I try to stay away from Windows 8 as much as I can still.
it's a restore feature of sorts, I guess.
Yeah, and it's real easy for the user, but I
kind of like a refresh, or not really a restore, but kind of like a refresh, but keeping all your documents and apps and programs intact.
Right. Yeah, and I'm sure there's probably techs out there going, "Duh, it's whatever it is." Laptops, those are really the main thing I get most of my repairs in on. Desktops are the older ones, and kind of like we mentioned earlier, if it's XP, I just try to steer them away from it and get them to get a new system. But I've got here in front of me, I got a list of some of the things that I've got on my back burners for ideas and stuff that I want to be doing and stuff. I don't know really where to go with. I know one thing that's a lot of people have talked about in the forum and stuff is like tracking the work that they're doing on computers, what programs they use and stuff like that.
Right.
And one that I have it, it's set up. All I got to do is just add a link to it on my is she too loud?
That
cat? Okay.
fine.
I just need to make a link to it and set a page up on my website for it. But it's OS Ticket. I know some people out there going, yeah, I've heard of that before. But it's a free software tracking program that you can go in there and set it up. And it's a help desk. And you can customize it to however you want it. Make the settings, go in there, change. By default, you could use it straight out. I mean, it was really easy to set up. So that's what I'm going to put into effect maybe.
Okay.
Whenever I get around to it.
What does it exactly do for you? Because I've never heard of OS Ticket before.
Okay. So it's like a support module or frame, kind of like a I'm just losing everything tonight. Was it CMR?
CRM?
CRM.
Okay.
Yes, CRM. It's one of those type of back-end programs where you can set it up and then people can click on it and they can go in there and put their name in, put their problem in, submit it, and then it'll email you and let you know that you got a work order pending. And then from there, you can break it down to, you know, assigning it to other people in your shop, or if it's just you, you know, you can set it up to where everything just comes straight to you.
Okay.
And then from there, you can, you know, track your work progress as you go through it, taking notes, adding pictures. And then when you're done, you can, you know, send an email back to them, letting them know it's done. They can log in and put in their ticket number and see what the status, you know, the last updated status of their computer or whatever it is,
right,
that's getting in, you know, for repair. You know, it's just the you know, a digital way to keep track. I mean, I'm still using sheet of paper that I fill out every time it comes in, just because,
right,
I don't really have that much traffic. So, you know, it's really kind of easy for me. I just wanted to do that just for the knowledge of setting it up and playing with it and you know, having it out there in case I want to get a little bit fancier with my stuff. And I probably should, I guess. I mean, it looks better. You know, it just adds that one more level of professionalism to your shop and to your services, you know, for your clients. And then knowing that they can log in at any time,
right,
to see what the status is, you know, it should kind of keep a fire under your butt to, you know, stay on top of what you're working on.
You know, it's funny because that's one of the things I've been looking into lately and trying to find a good way to keep track of that stuff. Because right now I use an Excel spreadsheet that I got from TechNibble, their computer repair business kit or whatever it was.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, Bryce did an update not too long ago, and the update was awesome. I really liked the you know, stuff he had in there. I customized a little bit for what I needed for me, and it works. And I have people fill out a section of the, you know, work order when I come in, and, you know, username, password, you know, where they live, email, and all that kind of stuff. And then they read and sign the contract on the back. Right. I still keep the paper copy. I would like to go digital, but I'm kind of, it seems almost easier for me to hand them that piece of paper, fill it out while I'm starting to look at the computer. Mm-hmm. And I would like something that I can track all this stuff a little bit better, because then I've got to take that information. I got to go into my Excel spreadsheet and put all the information in, what I did, you know, how much it was, and, you know, and I keep a log for all that stuff for my, you know, my accountant.
And, yeah.
You know, and it works fine, but I know there's probably a better way. And I also need a way that I can actually re-communicate with my customers, you know, via emails, thank you notes, whatever. And so those are some of the things I'm looking into. I've looked at a lot of different things, and I'm just not finding the ease of use. You know, I kind of want a system that's an all-in-one, because every system I've looked at, it still looks like I've got to enter the information a few times in order to get it to do what I want it to do. And, you know, whether it's on a manual piece of paper, or whether it's, you know, going back to the shop, getting in a program, typing all that kind of stuff in, which is kind of what I do now. You know,
yeah,
my invoices, I come back to the shop, I you know, put the information in, I do an invoice, which is you know, invoice/receipt for most people, and, you know, they pay me and they're on their way. And then I've got a digital copy I leave on my computer, which works. You know, if I ever want to go back and look up customers and see what I've done, I have that. So, but it would be nice to have that all in one. And I just, either the ones that I kind of like are too expensive at this point for my size shop, or there seems like they're too simple to where I have to set up a bunch of things that it's not going to be a whole lot different than what I'm already doing.
Right. Yeah. Whenever we get done, if you want, and for anyone that's listening, and you know, by then if I get around to it, it'll change a little bit, but the URL won't. It's ost.maximtechnology.com. So,
okay.
And you can kind of, you know, browse through it and kind of look at it. Like I say, it's still kind of has a lot of the default settings to it, but you can go in there and change all kinds of stuff, and it's free, you know. I mean,
can't be free.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. And the setup on it is, well, it's easy, but it's even easier through my because my domain and host provider has it as part of a module that you can just click and install and point it towards your, you know, domain, and boom, you're done. You're in there setting it up. So,
oh, so you actually use that. So it's actually through, it's hooked up through your website then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It'll, yeah. I'll, like I say, and I'm, once I get done with it, I'll put a link on my website and make it, you know, a prominent, you know, request support here or something like that. And then they'll be able to click it and fill it out. And then it'll be in my system. And then, you know, I'll have instructions. I'm sure, like it is now, though, most of the time for around here, people just call me and I say, yeah, drop it by the shop. And when I get in, I'll check it out. But, you know, either way, if whether they fill it out or whether I fill it out, like you say, you're going to have a way of tracking it
right
digitally. So
it's still all in one place.
Yeah,
that you can get to.
It's one in place. And then it's got the you know, ability for them to see what's going on.
Very good. Okay. Well, that's cool. Yeah. I think everybody gets to the point in their business where they start looking for things to, you know, make the business a little bit, easier to track, you know, a little bit, easier to deal with, because I think most technicians, at least myself, I don't mind working on the machines. I can't stand the paperwork.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So that's one of the things for me, but, no, that's good. Okay, so OST and then MaxMT or mtechnology.com.
Right.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, we'll OST. Put that in the show notes, and that way people can check that out and see what you're doing there and kind of keep up with that.
Yeah, and you know, and like I say, if it changes by then, just, you know, it'll be somewhere on the maxmtechnology.com website. I'll have a prominent, you know, support help, something okay. like that. And then
yeah, I'll definitely check that out, because that seems like a so that's very similar to the contact form that's on there type thing, where they kind of fill it out, but it's a little more in depth.
Yeah, you're talking about like the contact form for the WordPress.
Yeah,
that's kind of like generic for those. Yeah, yeah, because I mean, once you know from the user, or I guess you would say the customer side, you know, it's real clean and easy. There's not a bunch of information to throw them off, you know, just here it is, your information, you know, what the problem is, you know, it's got a section that's called help topic, and it's got a bunch of just generic stuff in it, but I'm going to put in there, you know, like desktop, laptop, iPhone repair, something like that. And then have their information, and then they can fill in their details of what they want. And then I'll have, an auto response on it, to where once they click, you know, create ticket, then it'll have a response on it, and it'll have the, it has their information of how they can check the status of their device, and then instructions, getting it to me, and then of course have my phone number, because that's really pretty much 99% of how I do my stuff. They just call either my business number, or, you know, if they know me, get my number or my cell phone number. But either way, they all, and that's something else that we can talk about. I'm sure a lot of other people use, or may have used, be using, controlling, separating their personal number from their work number, if they just have one phone number or one phone. But
yeah,
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, that's going to be another interesting topic that that you bring up, because, you know, right now I use Google Voice for mm-hmm. my business number, and I like the voicemail features, because even when I don't have connection to a data network, I still get a text message with the gist of the message. You know, it's not perfect, but I can kind of yeah. get the idea of what the person wants. And as soon as I can, you know, I'll give them a call back. Now, my understanding is Google Voice, that portion of it might actually go away. I don't, you know.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know what they're, because they're rolling it into Hangouts. So right. I don't know what that's going to change for all of us that use that. I mean, a lot of people use it for their main number, even people that don't do, you know, a service industry type thing. Mm-hmm. And they like it because of the voicemail and all that kind of stuff. Because, I mean, there are paid for services out there. You can do the same thing. And maybe that's the way I'll have to go. I'm not sure yet. So we'll find out in another couple weeks, I guess, end of the month,
well,
I think.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that.
So,
That'll blow.
Yeah. Yeah.
It won't be. I've got a lot of different things using Google Voice numbers, you know, mine and some of the work that my wife does and stuff like that. So yeah, that won't be fun having to change those and find something new.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's another thing you don't want to add to your list. So
exactly. Yeah, you want fun stuff.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Or money making stuff.
Right.
Not, oh crap, how am I gonna do something different now? Oh gosh. But let's see, I don't know what else. You know, unless you got anything else on that, that's kinda
okay.
You know, like we were talking about the websites and stuff like that. I know that Matthew's got, you know, took over the Tech Site Builder too, and I went in there and I didn't need it because I've been doing WordPress, and I've got a really good friend that I work with, and we trade out jobs and services and different things. So I've learned a lot from him, and what I don't, you know, what I don't know, I'll just take it to him. But I started looking at what he had out there, and I was like, you know, there's some cool stuff in here, you know, as a computer tech, you should probably have anyway. So I went ahead, you know, I mean, you know, it's good to support, you know, it's just another support the community type of thing anyway. And there was some stuff in there that I'm going to end up incorporating into my site once I get back to getting around to working on it again. So,
right.
So, yeah, that was, I'm glad he picked that up.
Yeah, because he added a couple things. You know, I actually moved from the Tech Site Builder 2, which I originally bought from Steve, and then I'd bought it well over a year ago. I actually didn't change it over for my static HTML website, my one pager, till February this year.
And that's about when I did mine.
Yeah, I took the dive and I said, you know, let me really dig into this. I've done a couple WordPress sites before, but if you don't do it all the time, it's like, you know, when you mud and tape drywall, you just don't remember how to do it that well. Right. It takes a long time, and it's almost like you got to relearn everything. Mm-hmm. And so I did change that over, and then he came up shortly thereafter with a pro version, and the pro version basically made the website mobile responsive, which was good. And it also increased my organic SEO. What happened with Google AdWords, and that's how I 100% advertise, other than customers, you know, word of mouth. I was going from an average position of 4, and I went up to an average position of 2.6 once I changed it over to a WordPress website, added a little bit more content. It's still very basic and still very, you know, it's not flashy or doesn't have a, you know, a ton of things on there, but it's got a few pictures and stuff and kind of the services I offer. And it's not real pretty, but, you know, it's effective for what it needs to be. And because what I've told people in the past is, I'm telling you right now, when people get to that website, the only thing they really see is, on mine anyways, is the phone number. The prices are right there in front of them. The address is in front of them. And every time they ask, where are you located at? And how much is that?
Right.
So I'm like going, so when they click, you know, when they actually go to my ad and they click through, they see the number and that's about it, you know? Yeah. So, but you know, I do understand that with, when you add a blog and stuff like that, it makes it more SEO friendly. That's the other thing he added with the pro version. He gives like 160 blog entries.
Yeah. That's why I picked it up. It makes it a lot easier. Yeah. Just to come in and drop some stuff in there. That way it's, you know, a little different from what you would, you know, the creator, you know, a little bit different from what they would be putting in there and stuff. And
exactly.
And you know, as I was going through it, I was like, cause I, you know, I was looking at, most everyone's that I could, remember inside the community and stuff. And, you know, I was looking through there, I was like, you know, we should like, just like trade out, you know, articles with each other and stuff, and, you know, do guest writing with each other just to kind of help. But then I don't know. Then you got to get into the whole SEO thing. It's kind of like it starts spiderwebbing everyone's site together.
Well, but, I think part of it, because you, Matthew said, hey, you can use these as is and put them on the website and that's fine. He goes, but what I would probably do is change them up just a little bit. So everybody's not, you know, everything you're talking about, if you're talking about dusting a computer, we're all talking about the same thing. maybe we have a little bit different angle in the way that we talk or represent ourselves. But that you can rewrite a few things and go, I think it sounds better this way or whatever. And that way everybody's not the same. Because I know, I think I'd heard Liam Tidwell was talking about getting like four people together and going, hey, all right, so, you know, one time a month, you know, each one of us writes a blog post and we just share it amongst ourselves. Right. And that kind of takes the load off of, you know, people doing it all the time, because it almost is like a full-time job, it seems
It would be, yeah. And my you know, again, on my little, I drew a blank notes here. I was going to call it Simple Mind is the program that I use to collect all my thoughts. But anyway, I was trying to think of what it was actually called. It's back to what you're talking about. Yeah. It's just, you know, do preloads on articles and stuff like that. So that way you kind of got, because yeah, like you say, that's a separate, time consuming job on its own.
Right.
Yeah.
So I figured, you know, to start off with 160 that I can, you know, that I can put in there over time, and, you know, probably once a month is going to be about, you know, my max, regardless if I'm doing it or somebody else is doing it anyways, unless something really, really important comes up. You know, maybe there's, you know, I guess things like Heartbleed and stuff like that would have been good to put that type of information on there. And, but you know, some of that, I don't know, for the regular consumer, it can get very, concerning, I guess, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things you want to put information that can be used and understood by a regular consumer. Not something that's going to be like, oh my gosh, now what do I do? You know, I can't do my banking online anymore, or, you know, whatever.
Right. It's like, yeah. You got to keep the scary stuff to just, a boo. not a, you know, Jason or, you know, coming at you with a chainsaw or something, you know, something that just totally freaks them out, because I've got some, you know, my clients that are, you know, like that, you know, like, oh my gosh, should I, you know, what should I do? Should I take all my information off my computer? You know, da, 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 da. I was like, you know, the odds are low, but, you know, we're going to do this to, you know, mitigate that, you know, that security risk to your computer.
Right.
You know, and a lot of, you know, things can just be done just by them knowing how to safely surf the internet. You know, that's the most basic, simplest way to do it. But, you know, occasionally there are those sites that you would, you know, assume or suspect to be a clean site is, you know, somehow or another got infected and, you know, they don't even know about it yet, or, they being the website owner, you know, just happens. So,
right, exactly. So yeah, I'm sure, and that's one of the thing. I know a lot of people have always they've always said, well, with WordPress, you've got to constantly keep it updated, you know, to keep it safe and stuff like that. What I've noticed though is back in the day, I remembered that most of the time WordPress would, you know, maybe would tell me when I log in that there's an update, but now. Mm-hmm. I'm getting emails that say, hey, by the way, just to let you know, we updated your site and you don't have to do anything. It's good to go. And I'm like, well, that makes it a lot easier than it used to be.
Exactly. Yeah. that came out with, was it 3.1? I don't remember where we're at now, what version we're under now, WordPress. But
it's like 3.9 or something now.
Yeah. Something's its way up there. So, but, you know, speaking of that, a cool plugin that I picked, you know, of course I'm going to talk about this one, but there's several different type of plugins out there. But, one that I picked up on is called, Rublon, Rublon. And, it's a two-factor, authentication for, your website. So once you load the plugin, you go in there, you activate it, and then you have to have, then on your mobile device, and it's all platforms, you download the app, and then when you go to log on, the first time you go to log on to your site, it'll bring up a QR code. You point your, mobile device, iPad, whatever it is, at the screen that you're working on, and then it'll recognize the QR code, and then you say yes, I authenticate it, and then at that point, it will know that that device is supposed to be accessing your website.
Okay.
And I don't know if it, you know, exactly how it does it, but if you don't have it, then it ain't happening. And then, you know, of course, if you go in and like clear, I guess maybe it must set some type of cookie or something. I don't know. It seems like it would be something a little bit more secure than that. But every now and then I know whenever I do a full-blown clear out on like run, you know, a CCleaner or something like that, then I have to whip out my phone or shoot the screen again, which, you know, I'd rather do that than have to worry about my site getting infected or something.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. It's and it's free for it's a free plugin. I've talked back and forth with the developers a couple of times across Twitter, and they've been really responsive and been real helpful with getting it set up and stuff. The only thing is like if anybody uses the WordPress app itself to do posts or anything to their sites, then it won't authenticate it that way, because you have to disable the I can't remember right off the top of my head what the actual, basically it's remote access through the app that you have to, under your settings you have to authorize it.
Okay.
And then but to use the Rublon, then you have to deactivate that, or it automatically deactivates it. But you can enable it, then you can use it, but it kind of is like self-defeating, you know?
Right, right.
Okay. Because then it allows remote access. Basically, it opens up remote access to it without using the authentication. So,
now, you use a WordPress app on your mobile device to do things on your website?
Yeah, WordPress has an actual app, and I'm sure there's, you know, several other companies that has something out there, but yeah, WordPress has an app that where you can go in and do posts. I mean, that's one thing I was kind of like about it, because it's really handy to just to be able to, you know, be sitting there, if you think of something, just you can whip out your phone and throw it up there, you know. But you can always go through the browser and set it up and do it that way, but it's a little bit more difficult because you don't get as much screen, and the app is
right.
You know, yeah, the app is optimized for, you know, a smaller screen.
Okay,
do it on an iPad or a tablet, then, you know, it doesn't really matter. I'm going to use the browser that way because you get more easier access to features on your site than just using the WordPress app itself. So,
okay. Yeah, so, I didn't even realize that there was a WordPress app. That's why I was asking, because I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. I guess I can see, you know, if I was on my, I don't know about phone, but if I was on my tablets, you know, laying in bed or something, I wanted to do something with it. Mm-hmm. Or if I was, you know, even out and about or whatever, on vacation or, you know, whatever.
Right, right. Yeah, and see, but then you got to remember, if you do have that Rublon and you go through the browser, you got to authenticate it. So, simplest way that I figured out was I grabbed another phone, took a picture of the QR code, and then opened the Rublon app on the actual phone that I'm working off of, and then pointed it at the QR code on the second phone, and then it authenticated it. So,
okay.
But it's a different QR code every time. It's not the same one. So it generates something new, because if you don't respond to it within, I don't know, a certain amount of time, it'll refresh and it'll have a new QR code. So.
Yeah, I think Facebook does something similar with their 6-digit code. Is when you know, I turned on the dual authentication, basically it comes up on my phone as a rotating number. Well, usually I don't have enough time to put the first number in, because by the time I get the alert or whatever, it's already been probably 20 some odd seconds. And so then I have to wait a few seconds for it to switch back over, and then I put in that code and boom, you know, I'm ready to go. And then, you know, with the other, you know, like Google and Microsoft and stuff like that, I can't remember which one of them, but one of them I have to put in my last four of my phone number. And if it matches, they'll send me a text message with a new code. And I have to do that every once in a while. But, you know, like I say, when I'll say, you know, remember this computer, but when you clear out the cookies and all that kind of stuff in the history, all that stuff goes away and you basically have to restart over with that stuff, you know, again. So,
right.
I'm sure there's a way to protect against that. I have not personally figured out a way to do that myself yet. So,
yeah, I see like Google has the Google Authenticator. I know probably some people have used it before. I had to use it for something. I forgot what it was. Oh, I think I did a Google Wallet purchase or something like that.
Okay. Yep.
Something like that. But yeah, they've got an app that's just for Authenticator and it was pretty cool. No, it was actually for something else. Anyway, since I don't know, we'll move on. I don't know where you want to go back. Just talking about WordPress in general. I mean, you know, I kind of maybe want to touch on that a little bit.
Okay.
You know, since we kind of opened up talking about, you know, techs needing other things to do, other than working on desktops or, you know, working on laptops, working on people's networks, you know, that kind of stuff kind of gets old after a while. That's kind of where I'm at. You know, you can venture off into doing business only, but you know, you're doing server setup and all that stuff, but then you kind of got to get into, you know, a specialty and you kind of got to, you know, there's probably others out there that argue, but I mean, if you don't have any type of formal training on it, it makes it a little bit more difficult. And then, you know, depending on where you live, you know, if you live in a bigger city, then I assume that bigger businesses are going to expect that, you know, you have some sort of certification, whether they ask for it or not. But, you know, where I'm from, you know, little businesses, we all know each other anyway. So kind of get away, you know, with, if you don't know something, you can just say, yeah, I don't know it. You know, and they're like, oh, all right, don't worry about it. And we'll figure it out. So
I think the only time you need certification is if you're actually going to work for a company. They might require it. As far as, you know, medium to, you know, even large businesses, not enterprise level businesses, but even medium and large businesses, I think a lot of their tech support comes from people that actually work there. Their so-called tech support. So, yeah, you know, Joe Schmo over here set this up, you know, a couple years ago. I walked into an office, it was a couple months ago, and went to do, they had their computer was slow, it was a Vista machine. So I go in, and yeah, the guy that had been working on it was a guy that worked there, and he basically did no updates on it. So it didn't even have Service Pack 1 or 2, and the thing was infected. So I cleaned it out, you know, installed Service Pack 1 and 2, and they're like going, you know, they couldn't figure out why it was taking so long. I said, well, whoever was working on this didn't really do anything. I mean, I don't know. I said, you guys were kind of living with this problem for a long time, well before I came along. And so they were happy once I was done. But that's what I see mostly with, you know, nobody wants to pay for that tech support. And, you know, I'm getting to the point now where I want to start some managed services myself for residents. And that's what I'm going to start doing with, you know, kind of supplement my business a little bit. And the reason for that is because the machines that I get in my shop, they have been infected probably for at least well over a year with several different viruses and different things running in the background. It wasn't until they got that last virus that basically broke something that they can't. And also now they can't get on the internet. So they're like, I can't get on the here, fix it. And I'm like going, oh my gosh, you know, this hasn't been updated. You know, the Windows update has been broken for, you know, a year and a half or whatever. And so these people, it's like, I know they've been living with a problem probably 3, 4, 5 months into their computer, you know, using their computer to get on the internet. It's getting slower. It's not being maintained. So that I want to sell the service of, hey, this is what people always say when they get the computer back. Man, my computer's never been so fast. Even when I bought it from the store. I'm like, yeah, I know. That's because I, you know, I did some things to, you know, make sure that it runs right. And they're, you know, they're very happy. And my pitch is going to be, hey, you know what? Do you want that to run like that all the time? Because I can sell you a monthly service for not much money that's going to, you know, make sure that that's maintained so that you never have these big, you know, computing problems where you got to all of a sudden be without your computer for, you know, 3 or 4 days. And, you know, we'll see how that goes. But that's, you know, I think there will be enough people out there because I know even I've got a customer tomorrow that he has been paying for a tune-up service on an XP machine. And, you know, and they come in and they do a tune-up like every 3 months. And he goes, the day after they do the tune-up, my email doesn't work anymore.
Nice.
Well, he's using Outlook Express. Of course, his email doesn't work anymore. So it's like, so I said, now I gave him a couple options. I said, hey, here's a couple computers you can buy. I said, I can pick it up. You can pick it up, whatever you want to do. So he went and picked up one today. And I've got a service call out there tomorrow where I'm going to set it up, set up his email, move his stuff over for the minimal amount of stuff he does. It'll be, you know, I just got him a simple, you know, dual core, 4 gig of RAM, 500 gig hard drive, and he'll be perfectly fine with that for what it does. But at least he'll be able to check his email on a regular basis.
Right.
But, you know, but that's one of the first, you know, I'm going to approach him on, hey, do you want this to run good all the time? Let me, you know, you're already paying for a managed service that apparently didn't work for you. You know, let's try mine.
Right, right.
So anyways, but yeah, that's kind of a side note there. But
yeah.
So yeah, that's, are you getting into web? So am I hearing it right? Are you getting into maybe doing WordPress for businesses and stuff around there or?
Yeah, about this time last year, I kind of had a brain burst on, you know, the things to do. And, I started kind of maybe thinking about, you know, it's called different things, but more or less it's just called it's marketing for businesses, social media marketing, or, you know, however you want to look at it.
Okay.
And that's kind of, and my focus I really want to do is just for, my local businesses here in town. And, because, you know, if you go in, like, I always just want to refer to a small town because I just don't. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a small, because even in the big cities, you kind of, because I know when we lived in Oklahoma City, you still just had like a general area that you mainly did everything in. You know, you did all your shopping in, you know, there's a Walmart or so, you know, within a couple of miles, and then all your small shops within a few miles. And I don't know if everyone kind of does that, just kind of stays within a small radius, even if you live in a big city. But so to me, either way, it would be, you know, fine. Like if you had a computer business in a large city, you're really probably only going to service people within maybe a 5 mile radius. I don't know.
Right.
I'd kind of like to get some feedback from, you know, people that are in a bigger city. But, you know, for me, you know, a small city, then you're going to pretty much 5 miles and you're out of city limits. So, so, you know, I handle the people that are outside that area too, and in local towns. But, you know, a lot of them do their marketing on Facebook. And so, you know, I was kind of watching Facebook, and there for a while it was really great for business. But now, you know, they've changed their you know, their approach on how they're working with businesses. So, you know, if you're not buying advertisement, then you're not being seen in anybody's timelines. So
right, people exactly.
are kind of, yeah, you know, are starting to drop off that way. You know, I just wanted something different to do, and that looked like it was a good idea. I've talked to several of my clients that I have, you know, for computers, and they were like, yeah, I wouldn't mind, you know, having a website that, you know, just calling it a website.
Sure.
And you know, some way to, you know, let people know whenever, you know, I've got something on sale, or, you know, I want to do something different, or, you know, just be able to keep in touch with my customers on a regular basis, other than just them coming in and, seeing me, whenever they come in to buy something. You know, I want to tell them when I got some new stuff that's, you know, ready for them to come in and see. So,
right.
That's kind of what I've been training myself for, and working with, some, you know, different social media experts, I guess you want to call them, whatever, online, and taking courses that way and stuff. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm wanting to do.
Okay.
You know, marketing, you know, everything from, you know, their email marketing campaigns to setting up their websites so they can, promote themselves outside of Facebook and,
right.
You know, across some of the other things. My focus was kind of be like, depending on who they are, like, you know, Foursquare, Instagram and Facebook, really for the businesses that I'm wanting to target around my area. are, you know, be the best platforms to work with them on.
Right, right.
And so,
no, I think even small businesses and stuff should have a web presence out there. And that's probably a great, they don't need to know whether it's WordPress or whatever. They don't really care. All they care about is that you're going to produce an online site for them that their customers, if they want, their customers can go there and get some information about the business, can get coupons or, you know, whatever they're doing for their business, contact information, all that kind of stuff, location. I mean, let's face it, when people are looking for businesses anymore, I don't think, I can't remember the last time I opened up a yellow phone book and actually found, somebody, a business, a service that I needed. Guess what I do? I go online. I go to Google. I type in my, whatever I'm looking for. Hey, I need a furnace guy. Hey, I need a computer guy. Hey, I need a, whatever. And that's really what it's coming down to. So I think that's a great mm-hmm. business. If you want to take that, the WordPress knowledge you've gotten from building your own site and move that into other businesses, that's awesome. I think that's definitely a way to go.
Yeah, because see, I've got my main target, and he's a good friend of mine, is the guy I'm working with right now. He runs the local theater, which one is good for me because we're switching out services. I'm getting free, advertising on the big screen, which really of, where we are, that's like the second biggest trafficked area.
Sure.
For this region of where I live. I mean, we got, people from outlying cities, small towns, whatever, come in to our theater because it's one of the best theaters in this part of the country. I mean, it's got the Sony, what is it called? I can't think of it offhand. The Sony HD, 3D projector. Some crazy high-end theater projector, because the guy that owns the theater is like, pretty much owns every building in town, and it's a family thing. So and the cool thing is he likes to keep the town kind of nostalgic, sort of. So it's like a old theater, but it's like updated with all the latest technology. So it's really nice. Anyway, I don't even know where I'm rambling on to. But yeah, so that's my main target is that. And then we got some flower shops in town. A couple of chiropractors and massage technicians. People like that you don't really, they're word of mouth. They're those kind of businesses are almost a word of mouth business that, a little presence is not going to, hurt them. And you can always, offer up, coupons on their sites or, different right. things like that. And you don't have to keep it. It doesn't have to be a busy site with a blog and all that. Just, something where they can, at least direct their clients to, or, share, right. share their information with. Like you say, this day and age, nobody really uses the yellow pages, and I get calls and emails all the time. I'm sure everyone else does. If you got a business, we reviewed your website and we can increase your SEO by da da da.
Yeah, I always tell them, I'm happy with my SEO, but thank you. So if anybody wanted to get in touch with you and ask you a question, what's the best way to contact you?
I don't know. You can use me I haven't been too active in it lately. I need to get back on it again, but inside the Podnuts forum, the other day I set up a reminder for me to get on Podnuts forum and check and post and stuff. Just email me at what's the best one? Just use me at max@maximtechnology.com is okay. A good one, I guess. That'll be good. Or my phone number. I mean, I'll throw it out there. It's 806-553-0832. And that's a Google Voice number. So,
okay. That's your business
and,
number. Okay.
So we'll see how long that number works, I guess, coming up here. And, I don't know. that's about really about it. Twitter, I'm on there all the time. Google Plus, pretty much if you Max Team on, you'll reach me through my personal accounts that way.
Okay.
Pretty much across everything. So I was able to kind of dominate on that one.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, so.
Very good. All right, well, it sounds good. And you guys can find me on Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, please email us at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. You guys can help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping in Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Remember that your price does not change, but it puts a little change in the pocket of the Podnuts Network to bring you these great shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
D72 is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.